This is The Source on KSTX, a product of the Texas Public Radio Newsroom. I'm David Martin Davies. Last year in the U.S. military, there were more deaths from suicide than there were from combat. The sobering statistic comes out despite the influx of money and coverage of depression and post-traumatic stress disorder amongst veterans in the past several years. Over the weekend, the White House and the Department of Defense announced a significant investment in research for PTSD, and the University of Texas Health Science Center will be leading with a big part of that effort. Joining us to talk about this is Dr. Alan Peterson. He's the director of Strong Star, a consortium to alleviate PTSD happening here in San Antonio. Welcome to The Source, Dr. Peterson.
Thanks for having me on your show.
And we definitely want to hear from our listeners. If you've got a connection to PTSD, if you can help us understand how it's impacting your life, we want to hear from you. Give us a call at 614-8980, 614-8980. So before we went live on the air, Dr. Peterson, you talked about the social support being so critical for helping people who are dealing with mainly our military guys coming back with PTSD. Talk about social support.
Sure. Social support is the one factor that research has consistently shown to be the biggest factor to help people naturally recover. So most people will experience a trauma at some point in their lives, and most people will recover. Good social support, having friends, family, loved ones, colleagues, battle buddies, talking with people, having them help get you back to your life or your lives, that's a piece that helps people naturally recover and not develop PTSD. So that gives us some insight as to the factors that are involved.
And of course, there are people that felt like they gave someone all the social support that they could, yet that individual still fell victim to PTSD and maybe took their own life.
That's right. Some of the things that occur in the combat zone are beyond belief. You can't make these things up. There's some things that are so horrific that people have trouble talking about it, have trouble thinking about it. So even with the best of social support, there's some events that are so horrific that people may still go on to develop PTSD.
So, and you believe that PTSD can be cured, and that is a controversial topic. Can you talk about what a cure for PTSD might look like?
Sure. It is a controversial topic. When I talk about a cure for PTSD, we're not talking about, you know, no longer having any symptoms, no longer worrying about things, forgetting about what happened. What we're talking about is having treatments that are available that help people get back to functioning in life similar to they were before the traumatic event. And whether that's possible or not, we don't know. I believe that there's a good chance that many people can be effectively treated. And in the position that I'm in, basically what I say is, if I set my sights any you know, lower than trying to search for a cure, it would be a disservice to our servicemen and women who have deployed and risked their lives. So that's my goal. And to set a goal lower than that would really be a disservice.
Right. But it is not just a goal of, you know, to make it sound good or flowery. And we need to find a goal. We need to find a cure because these people, number one, they're suffering. And they gave so much to the country, and nothing less will be acceptable.
Right. It's not likely to be a magic bullet, if you will. What we're wanting to do is develop treatments, and that might be a variety of treatments. And some treatments may work for certain individuals, but not others. We want to have a variety of treatments that are highly effective treatments, ideally that will allow the majority of individuals who receive a particular treatment to reach the point where they no longer have PTSD.
Is there any way of knowing that, because PTSD has gone, you know, we used to call it shell shock in previous wars, and is it the same thing? Is it the same level? Has it gotten worse?
There's much more awareness now, so there's really no evidence that it's necessarily worse than it was before. We have had people that have deployed for longer periods of time, been exposed many, many times, but there were some horrible things that happened in Vietnam and Korea and, you know, previous wars. So we don't have evidence that it's necessarily worse. We're much more aware. And so our nation, from the president's office, Congress, the VA, the DOD, our communities, we're all trying to be proactive and do some things as early as possible.
So let's talk about what is PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. We know someone had an experience, so they're in the post that traumatic experience.
Right.
But the stress continues throughout their life and probably comes at them in waves.
Right. So if I use military personnel as an example, most military personnel, they're trained really, really well. When they deploy, they were exposed to many, many traumas that they were expecting. And part of their training, they kind of realize those things are going to occur. Most cope with those things extremely well. But despite the best of preparation, there's things that people get exposed to that are beyond human belief, you know, that you could never expect would happen. And sometimes those things haunt people. They see things, they hear things. They have these images in their heads that are really hard to let go.
And so after they're no longer in the service, they're trying to acclimate to civilian life, have a hard time dealing with day-to-day pressure, keeping a job, just the stress of family life, and they're having trouble.
Sure.
And so are you treating the symptoms and trying to give people the tools to manage their lives or trying to or go deeper? What are you trying to accomplish?
Well, we actually have many different goals that we have. So within our consortium, we've got a number of studies. Some of the studies are actually treating individuals while they're still in the war zone, you know, soon after they've been exposed to a trauma. So we want to intervene as early as possible. A lot of studies will be looking at people who have just returned from a deployment, and we're, again, trying to intervene early, hoping that we can have better results by early involvement. Others are individuals who are prior service that have separated, that are a little further out, and we're looking at treatments for them as well. Some are talk therapies. We're looking potentially at medications. We're looking at the biological basis, if you will, for who may develop or how we may develop new medications, things to maybe prevent PTSD in the future.
So can we look at the people who don't get PTSD? Maybe they've gone through the same or similar experiences in a war zone, but they don't have it. What can we learn from them?
We can learn a variety of things. One of the things that I have learned is that no two people really experience the same thing. I'm retired military myself, so I've deployed for Operation Enduring Freedom, Operation Iraqi Freedom, and I've seen many situations where there's an event that occurs, and if you could put a helmet cam on someone and show exactly what one person's experience was in a situation, you can have a dozen people exposed to an IED explosion. Everybody's experience is a little bit different. They don't see the same things. They don't experience the same things. The trauma related to the event, that's the biggest factor of all that predicts the PTSD. There's other factors related to your history and your biology and whatnot that all contribute to that. But if the trauma didn't occur, the person wouldn't develop PTSD.
We're talking about PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. We're in the studio, Strong Star, the director of the research into trying to find a cure. Dr. Alan Peterson is here. He's also a professor of psychiatry at the School of Medicine at UT Health Science Center. We want to hear from our listeners about PTSD. Give us a call. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Post-traumatic stress disorder, the diagnosis, the prevention, the treatment for service members and veterans who've seen the worst in the war zones. And we're trying to figure out how we can help our service members deal with this. We want to hear from our listeners. The number is 614-8980. With me in the studio, Dr. Alan Peterson, PhD, professor of psychiatry at the UT at the School Health Science Center in San Antonio. You know, you were saying before the show began that people don't actually even have to go to war to get PTSD. Service members may have it and they never actually saw combat.
Right, right. So there's many different types of trauma that can occur. People don't think about it necessarily, but actually the most common cause of PTSD in America is motor vehicle accidents. If you look here in San Antonio today, probably there's people who will be seriously injured, maybe killed. There's bystanders or passengers that may be in the vehicle. There are physical, sexual assaults that occur. There's many different types of trauma.
So these are civilian PTSD.
Yes.
But it's similar but different than combat PTSD.
Yes, there's actually been a good bit of research looking at what works for civilians who've been exposed to trauma, and actually some treatments are very effective for civilians. One was published this past year that showed that 80% of people with a sexual assault were treated at the point of loss of diagnosis. They were in remission. 5 to 10 years later, they were still in remission. Just huge success with some civilian studies. With the military, there are many similarities, but also the trauma that occurs in a combat zone, the repeated trauma, the types of trauma, it's different than civilians. So we're trying to look at how do we develop treatments that might be even half as effective as what the study I quoted would be phenomenal for the military.
And I'm sure many people have PTSD and don't even realize it. I guess the things to look for are sleep disorders and chemical abuse. That would be something that might be telling you something.
Sure, sure. Nightmares, having re-experiencing symptoms where you think about it a lot, have these memories that come up, lots of physical arousal that occurs.
You say physical arousal, that doesn't necessarily mean like, you know, that can be just a reaction.
Yes, so the type of arousal you would have when you're in a dangerous situation where your heart rate goes up, individuals that have PTSD can feel like that a lot when they're exposed to what seems their reaction is if there's danger, but it's a false alarm, if you will.
Right, so the clinical use of the word arousal is different than we use in the common language.
Sure.
So it's like a cold sweat breaking out, nervousness,
absolutely,
anxiety,
right,
that type.
Right.
All right, we're going to go to the phones. We want to hear from our listeners. It's 614-8980 is the number to call. Let's get Adele on the line. Adele, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Doing great. Thanks for calling in. Go ahead.
Okay, so my husband deployed to Iraq twice, and he's currently going through the claims process for PTSD and a couple other things. He's been deported since 2009. But he feels like there's a lot of pressure for to take the medication to treat PTSD. But the problem is we've always been the type of person that kind of avoids medication at all costs and tries to do the non-pharmaceutical way of treatment before doing the medication. And the issue that he has is he doesn't feel like there's that kind of outreach for those services. Maybe someone's not communicating enough to him. Is there anything that he can do to maybe increase that type of treatment instead of the medication?
Adele, thank you for the call. Let's get Dr. Peterson's reaction to that.
Sure. That's a great comment. Medication treatments are probably the most commonly used treatments for PTSD. It's pretty easy to give a medication. There are talk therapies that are helpful, that are beneficial, and it sounds like you're trying to be a good consumer of your own health care, your family member's health care, and that's great. There are treatments available. Two of the most common are one's called prolonged exposure therapy, one's called cognitive processing therapy. I think it's worth reaching out to your community providers to be, you know, trying to be a good consumer and ask for types of treatments that are likely to be helpful. And there are some very effective talk therapies for PTSD.
What about meditation? That's been proven to be just as effective as all this dosage that people have been given.
There are a lot of alternative types of treatments, if you will, like meditation, hypnosis, yoga. There are a number of studies that have shown that they help a little bit. They help with some of the symptoms that are there, but they're not quite as effective as some other forms of treatment.
Okay, back to the phones. Mark wants to join the conversation. Mark, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I was wondering, you touched on the prevalence of PTSD in the current conflicts versus the World War II in Vietnam, Korea area, and I didn't quite get the answer. I didn't know if you fully explained. Is there more prevalence of PTSD in the current conflicts versus those conflicts? And also, along with comparing the two eras of conflicts, World War II, Korea, Vietnam versus now, there's obviously a different pool of people. We had the average person in the 1930s and 1940s that experienced World War II and Korea, but now we have a different pool of people now. And is the social upbringing any factor in if there's a more prevalence of PTSD now versus those prior conflicts?
All right. Thank you for that question. And let's see what Dr. Peterson has to say. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, you have got some great ideas, great questions. I mean, you need to be on my research team because, I mean, those are all the things that we're thinking about. It's difficult to go back over time to Korea, World War II, and make comparisons. We didn't even have the diagnosis back then, and there weren't the surveillance mechanisms that were used. So it really is, it's difficult to make those comparisons. The prevalence now, we think it's somewhere between about 12 and 17% of people coming back are at risk for PTSD. We've been at war now for over 12 years, so there's some people that have deployed four, five, six times. We have had less than 10,000 that died. World War II, 440,000 died over 2 to 3 years. So there's some big differences that are there. Really, really hard to make those comparisons across time.
But after World War I, we saw, and that was a very traumatic experience for a lot of service members. They came off the farm. America was still very rural. Then they would go into this, and World War I was very horrific. And then they would came back to the United States, and they had trouble readapting to society. And we saw this population of hobos and train hoppers who just drifted around and were not able to settle down into a family life and were hit skid row. And, they would self-medicate, and there was no system to track or treat these individuals.
Exactly. And so right now, with the increased awareness that we have, there's many different groups that are trying to intervene to make sure that that doesn't happen. I mean, we're already seeing there's a lot of homeless, there's a lot of unemployed, there's a lot of substance use disorders that are occurring. So we're concerned that some of these patterns are already starting to be repeated, and we're trying to figure out how do we not repeat the Vietnam scenario, if you want to use that as an example.
Back to the phones. Michael is waiting. Michael, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, David. Thanks so much for taking my call. I'd just like to let your audience and your guests know about some research that's being done by the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies with a chemical called MDMA for treating post-traumatic stress disorder. And they find it's having significant improvement, not only improvement, but actually curing the individuals that have all kinds of post-traumatic stress disorder. They've got 7 worldwide phase 2 clinical trials, and all the ones that are done in the U.S. are FDA approved. And more information can be found about the organization and the clinical trials at www.maps.org/research/MDMA.
All right, Michael, thank you for that call. Is that something that you all have looked at?
I am aware there are some studies that are looking at this, and we need good studies. We need FDA-approved studies, so we're open to exploring new areas, new ways of helping PTSD.
All right, and back to the phones. Renee is waiting. Renee, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. Appreciate it. I've been diagnosed with chronic PTSD by the Veterans Administration, but my question has to do with veterans like myself that have had PTSD, but the government has not released the factors contributing. In other words, has there been any studies, like people like me, that can't really discuss what occurred by the government? So, yep, you do have PTSD, and how do we cope with that, knowing that we can't really disclose information to our providers due to secrecies or whatever? The government does not allow us to communicate that with our providers.
Okay. All right, Renee, we'll see if Dr. Peterson can react to that. Anything you can say? He's saying that sometimes there's secrecy. You can't really discuss what happened, I guess, out in the field.
Right. That's not that uncommon. I experienced something similar to that. My first deployment, when I came back, I was told you can't tell anybody where you were, what you did, all of those things. Early this morning, I was on the phone with a soldier from Fort Hood that was concerned about those things. So it actually is much more common than you would think. There are ways to get around that. There are actually some individuals who have top secret SCI clearances, for example, who actually can talk to individuals about these things. So there are some ways around it, because we don't need to know necessarily the location, the organizations, the who was involved. It's more the details, the troubling details that occurred, that having someone to talk with about those can be very helpful. So it is a difficult situation. There are some ways that you can help people, even though they may not be able to tell all of the details.
Now, there was a recent study out that talked about the deployment in the war zone and the connection to suicides. And the study was saying that, this was published in the Journal for American Medical Associations, that you didn't necessarily have to, that being in combat didn't contribute to suicides. Well, that it was just being, just the impact of a nation at war for so long. Is actually maybe the stress of that is more of the problem.
Right. This is one study, and these results seem kind of strange. It's hard to believe that going to a combat zone, trauma exposure has no impact on suicide. There's been several studies, though, that seem to be showing the same thing. There's a new study that will come out that actually is suggesting otherwise, but it's a very complex process. And I will say, having served over 21 years myself in the military, when I wasn't deployed, it was incredibly stressful as well, because you are trying to do your job with half or a fourth of the resources that you have. So the military as a whole has been incredibly stressed for the past 10 to 12 years. And there's many other factors that relate to suicide, family breakups, marriages, many, many factors can relate to why someone might take their lives. Combat is one that we think is important, but there's other things we need to figure out as well.
PTSD, this is an issue that we definitely have got to find a solution for these servicemen and women. Women being impacted by it as well definitely have given so much to the country. We've got to figure something out. I'm glad to see that the resources are being given to try and do that. Dr. Alan Peterson, he's PhD professor of psychiatry at the School of Medicine at UT Health Science Center. Thank you for coming on The Source today. We're going to take a quick break. We're listening to NPR News. We come back, we're going to talk about the library budget cuts. Stay tuned.